You're listening to The Pulse. I'm Mike and Scott, and you can find our podcast on iTunes. Let's head to Washington. It's October 2015.
So welcome to the White House, and welcome to the Bystander Stop the Bleed Forum.
Stop the Bleed. The title basically explains this initiative, which was introduced by the Department of Homeland Security.
Less than 5 minutes. That's how long it can take for a severely injured person to bleed to death. And we all know through our own experiences that 5 minutes is often just not enough time to get a trained professional to the scene. 5 minutes can make the difference between life and death.
So the White House is pushing for more Americans to be ready to step in and save a person who might otherwise bleed to death. And in a city like Philadelphia, with over 1,000 shootings last year, a program to train citizens looks and sounds a lot like something out of a war zone. Tanya English reports.
It's 6 in the evening. Kids are running around. Their parents and neighbors are gathered in an elementary school cafeteria. There are first aid training stations set up all over the room, and it's time for everyone to rotate.
Oscar!
In the back of the room, ER nurse Edward Bell is teaching direct pressure and elevation.
Pressure point's located on the inside of the arm, and basically you're going to take your hand, get up underneath the inside of the arm, and you're just going to, it's like clamp it down.
He demonstrates how to stop the blood flow, then a woman from the group tries it.
And you take an old towel, T-shirt, and you just wrap it around as tight as you can until help arrives.
Bell and the other trainers are from Temple University Hospital, and this program was specially designed for communities dealing with gun violence. In North Philadelphia, Temple is the closest emergency room.
I think we do a really great job, but a lot of times we're pulling people out of the back of a police car who have had absolutely no intervention whatsoever.
First aid right at the scene of a stabbing or a shooting can give someone a little more time. But Bell says personal safety comes first.
We don't want anybody going out, quote unquote, when bullets are flying.
So far, more than 100 people have come out to community events like this one in North Philadelphia.
My name is Louise Smith, and everybody call me Miss Midge, and I'm from 12th and Cambridge.
Smith volunteers at the rec center down the street, and in the summer at the big neighborhood block party, she's the lady who sells the flavored water ice.
Even with the kids, if they don't have no money, I just give it to them.
She's lived here for 30 years.
About a year ago, we seen a shooting round here, and it's a shame the two boys died right on the sidewalk. They just, you know, wasn't nobody there to help them. And neighborhoods being tore down. It wasn't just that incident.
When a young African-American man dies in Philadelphia, more than half the time, it's a gun homicide.
It's not because of cancer, it's not because of car accidents, it's not because of house fires. It's because somebody pointed a gun at him and pulled that trigger.
Scott Charles is the trauma outreach coordinator at Temple, and for a decade, he's worked to prevent gun injury. He's waiting for laws to change and the political debate to untangle, but he says bystander first aid is something that can help right now.
We have to put the power in people's hands to address this issue.
Temple University's program is called Fighting Chance. So far, there's no real funding behind it, and all the first aid trainers are volunteers like Nurse Maureen Quigg.
The knee closest to the victim is down, the other knee is up, and that's what you stand up with, the power from your legs and not your back.
Quigg explained how to do a two-person lift and carry.
You crisscross hands in the back, one hand, and you grab onto either the belt loop or the pants themselves. But your arms are like in an X across his back. You count to three, keep your head up.
One, two, three, look up.
That's not easy. See, no, that's hard.
But the smaller women aren't convinced they'll be able to help a 250-pound man lying in the street. But Quigg thinks they could.
If it's someone that you care about or in a situation where there's a lot of activity, your adrenaline's going. You have all this extra energy, you have all this extra power. And if you focus on doing it and doing it the right way, you can lift someone who you would never think you could lift, and you can do it without hurting yourself.
In the middle of the room, another nurse is teaching her group how to tie a tourniquet.
There are 5 gunshots to that leg. You're going to control the bleeding to all 5 of those gunshots. That's really
the topic
important.
Is serious, but the mood
us.
Isn't. 63-year-old Alice Kellum laughs with her neighbors as she moves from one training station to the next.
I know about the tourniquet. I know if you use your string, your hair, your weave, anything to stop the blood. Yep, I know that already.
Kellum has on a camouflage tracksuit and rhinestone hoop earrings. She's chatty. But when she talks about her husband, who was murdered in 1990, she doesn't have a lot to say, except that it was senseless.
They took his sneaks and his hat. That was it.
Kellum wasn't there when her husband was gunned down, but says she's ready to help someone else. And there's evidence that bystanders and witnesses to violence do better psychologically if they take action.
The freeze response is the predictor of worst outcomes.
Psychiatrist Stephen Berkowitz is part of the Violence Prevention Initiative at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
You know, that deer in the headlights, that rabbit freezing in the street, when human beings do that, that predicts a bad outcome.
He says the closer you are physically or emotionally to a violent incident, the greater the chance that you'll develop post-traumatic stress disorder. Nosheen Hadari is a crisis therapist in Chicago. She cares for children and families in South Lawndale, Humboldt Park, Cicero, and says nearly every one of her clients has been affected by gun violence.
These kids even tell me, like, yeah, you know, somebody gets shot and then, you know, everybody's talking about it, woo-woo, for a couple days, and then it's back to normal, and then it happens again.
For them, the trauma is not post. Hadari says it's always happening now.
Hyper-awareness to the sounds in your neighborhood, to the people, to facial expressions. Your body has to be able to predict these situations before your mind is even developed enough to understand what that means. That hypervigilance is what's necessary.
Offering first aid skills could help community members feel less helpless, Hadari says, especially in parts of Chicago where there's no level one trauma center nearby. But for some people, teaching everyday citizens to be first responders feels like conceding that certain neighborhoods will never be safe. It feels like giving up.
Yeah, I can understand it. And I also think that it possibly comes from a more privileged place. And yeah, I mean, I realize there's going to be neighborhoods that maybe it's less the case, but, you know, maybe there's still some connection to it that would be valuable.
At the national level, advocates for the Stop the Bleed initiative say teaching first aid to control blood loss helps prepare the country for the next bombing or natural disaster, not just the next shooting. Homeland Security experts at the White House say it's just part of bystander education, like teaching CPR or making sure one of those defibrillators is nearby to jumpstart someone's heart. At the community training in Philadelphia, everyone's talking, but emergency medicine doctor Tim Bryan's voice is the loudest.
Good? Everybody ready?
He's a Navy veteran, and you can tell he's used to giving commands.
All y'all know what you're doing? You know what you're doing, ma'am?
Bryan designed the program based on his experience as a combat medic. At the end of the evening, he stages a mini drama to test the group. One person needs to be the casualty, someone else will wrap the bandages and place the tourniquet.
We got a volunteer shooter, too.
Two other people will lift and carry the victim. Bryan tells one woman to hold back the crowd and clear the way for the police.
All right, so remember, hey, you could ask somebody, hey, help me control the scene, right? Who called 911? Ready? Bam! Down you go.
Those are the sounds of a mock shooting and pretend witnesses rushing in to help. Tanya English reported on the efforts to teach first aid skills to bystanders of gun violence.